This is Lindsay Bean. The name of my memoir is Embracing the Dragon, One Mother's Relentless Search for Healing and Hope, and it's available on Amazon. It's also available on my website, lindsaybean.com.
And it's B-E-A-N-E, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's A-Y, Lindsay with an A-Y.
Right, right. First of all, thank you very much for doing the interview. I appreciate it.
No,
and
sure.
Let's start at the end, if you will. How is your son, Russell, doing now?
He is in incredibly good health. He's 28 years old. He's employed full-time, lives a couple of hours away, so I don't get to see him quite as much, but he's great.
Wow.
He's great.
Does he pay attention to his health as much as you used to?
Well, yes and no. He doesn't do exactly as I would have him do if I still had any authority over what he does.
Yeah, that's life, right?
It is. But he's very careful, and he's very attuned to his health. He eats really well. He exercises. He loves walking. He goes for long walks and often calls me, and I'm sure other people, when he's walking. But he does take very good care of his health, and he's scheduled for the first vaccine shot. Glad to have him be safe. Yeah.
Very good. Your story is really remarkable. Let's go back to when you were pregnant with Russell. Anything unusual in the pregnancy?
Not at all. And he was my younger son. So my older son was born when I was 35. Mm-hmm. And I had been offered amniocentesis when I was pregnant with his brother. And I asked about the risk of miscarriage. And at that point in time, so we're going back 34 years, at that point in time, risk of miscarriage was equal to the risk of having, let's say, a baby with Down syndrome. And I couldn't stand the risk of miscarriage. I was already feeling the baby move, and so I didn't have any tests, and he was born perfectly healthy. So my second son was born when I was 40, and so the risks were a little bit higher for different complications. But I figured the first pregnancy had been a breeze, the second one would be too, and he was born, he was fine, except for this piece of tissue on his lower back, and it all went downhill from there. The strange thing in retrospect is that if we had had genetic testing with my son, it wouldn't have told us anything. Spina bifida is only detected when the growing fetus's back is open, their spinal column is open, and the spinal fluid leaks into the amniotic fluid. And we wouldn't have tested for cystic fibrosis because we had no idea there was any history of it in either one of our families.
Did you ever get genetic testing after the fact?
We did. I requested genetic testing for all four of us. So with Russell, his brother, their father, and myself. In order to manifest cystic fibrosis, you inherit a gene, a mutation, from each of your parents. And so what we discovered was that I was a carrier of one mutation. My husband at the time was a carrier of another mutation, and Russell unfortunately got both. His older brother is a carrier, but did not get both.
When Russell was born, he was found to have spina bifida, a very mild form of spina bifida, correct? And then weeks later, after he had surgery for the spina bifida, he was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, correct? Now, your book really conveys the heartache that you and your husband went through. But almost from the beginning, I was struck that you were on a mission. You were going to do everything you could to keep this son of yours healthy.
I can't be sure what would have happened if he had only been diagnosed with one or the other, either spina bifida or cystic fibrosis. I think what happened, he was 8 months old when he was diagnosed with CF, and it was a double whammy. It just felt impossible. This little baby had been through surgery to correct the spina bifida, and he had slowly recovered. He then manifested all sorts of symptoms, but I was told, don't worry, everything's fine. He's recovering from the surgery fine. And then when he was 8 months old, we had a new pediatrician, and she connected the dots and said, I think we need to test him for cystic fibrosis. And when his test came back positive, it just seemed impossible that he would be burdened with two very major life-threatening conditions. And I was also told with the cystic fibrosis that he would die. He would have a life of sickness and a decline to lung damage and scarring and all sorts of things, and he would die young. And it brought out the I don't know, the warrior in me. It was unacceptable to me.
During these years, this odyssey, did you ever have people say, come on, Lindsay, you have to accept that this is the case. You are just giving yourself so much heartache by persisting like this. And did you ever think, wow, maybe they're right?
Well, you know, when he was born and first diagnosed, I had no medical training whatsoever. I had no medical background. Now I have a public health background, but even that's not medical or clinical. And I was up against these specialists who had put in 20 plus years in children's hospitals treating children with cystic fibrosis. And they knew far more than I would ever be able to learn. And so, yes, it happened over and over in somewhat subtle ways. The doctors didn't take the alternative healing seriously at all, ever. And I told them everything that we were doing. I kept them up to date. I gave them lists of different herbs that were in the herbal tonics that he was taking, the down to the microgram of every nutritional supplement he was taking. I told them about the acupuncture and so on. And they were absolutely, couldn't have cared less. It held no interest for them whatsoever. They just kept saying, well, perhaps it's a waste of time and money. And they were very convinced, the specialists, that cystic fibrosis is life-threatening and that it compromises life expectancy drastically. And that had been their experience. And what I was told is, we haven't lost a child under 12 in years. And I thought, oh my God, 12. You know, I'm not capable of withstanding that. Even the alternative practitioners, they gave me such hope. And most of them were really not intimidated by CF. They weren't intimidated by his prognosis and the severity of the disease. Once in a while, one of them, I remember the nutritionist at one point when I was complaining about his runny nose or something fairly minor, she said, Lindsay, he has cystic fibrosis. If I had forgotten. Yeah, I mean, I felt like a ping pong ball at times. You know, I would go to the acupuncturist and he'd get a treatment and she would be wonderfully enthusiastic about how strong his body was and that he was doing so much better. And then at the end of the week, I would go have an appointment at the hospital and just be dragged down as if being hit by a Mack truck.
Do you think it was because they are quote unquote scientists and that they have so much, so many years invested in seeing things a certain way that they couldn't take their blinders off for a minute?
I don't know. I don't like to try to speak for them, but we were offered an opportunity by NIH to do a case study of my son at one point when he was four or 5 years old and had completely rejuvenated. And the CF specialist had no interest, absolutely no interest. I begged him for 6 months to call NIH and he had no interest. Yeah.
Wow. You went down the alternative medicine route almost by accident. Wasn't it your husband had acupuncture for his allergies and everything sort of blossomed from there?
That's true. It was a coincidence, more serendipity. Some people say there are no coincidences and it started to feel that way. But yeah, the acupuncturist did an amazing job with my husband. He suffered from terrible allergies. We were living near Washington, D.C., and just about everything grows in that part of the country. His allergies, within a couple of months of treatments, his allergies were gone, completely gone. And what was interesting is that eventually he stopped getting acupuncture and the allergies came back. And that went on a couple of times. But I was just amazed at her ability. And in one of their conversations before an appointment, he told Mary White was our acupuncturist. He told her about Russell and she offered to treat him for free. She had never treated a child. She said, give me a couple of weeks to explore and so that I know what I'm doing with a child. And she started treating him when he was 8 or 9 months old. And the acupuncture was amazing. It really had an amazing effect on him. It took a while, took a good year before we saw really consistent results. I realized in retrospect, that it's such an odd thing to me. In writing the book and kind of finalizing the book, I realized that I had tried all five modalities of alternative healing as a young adult. I tried acupuncture in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. I was prescribed some homeopathic remedies when I lived in Paris. My mother took me to see an osteopath when I was a pianist in a former life and had pains in my arms and shoulders and so on. And I had dabbled myself with nutrition and herbs working in a health food store. And I had tried all five of those. And the acupuncture definitely was just by luck. It was serendipity. And we sort of went from there. But I didn't realize until 20 years later that those were the five that I had tried.
But that is interesting. And also acupuncture, when you quote unquote rediscovered it, it was sort of like a gateway treatment to get you to rediscover all the other things like herbs.
Absolutely.
Later on, you met up with that legendary figure, Dr. Fulford, renowned osteopath, right? And what did he do? What did he do for Russell?
That was really an amazing experience. Russell was four. Okay. My sister, by coincidence, lived in Kirksville, Missouri, which is where the first and the most famous osteopathic university is, named after A.T. Still, who was the Civil War surgeon who invented osteopathy. And she had a close friend who was married to a man who was Dr. Fulford's protege. One coincidence after another.
Wow.
And he was 90, gosh, I think he was 93 at the time. And so his protege, Rick, told my sister, oh, sure, have her give him a call. Here's his home phone number. And this is a man that was deeply revered. He was retired, semi-retired. And so I called him and he said, well, I don't treat adults anymore, but I do still treat children because they're a little bit easier for me. And he said, we'll have to wait until after the winter solstice, till the energy comes back up. So I called him back. We flew out there, myself and my two sons, and he was just an amazing human being. He was a man of very few words. He was very gentle, very kind with my kids, gave them his full attention, even my older son. And then he gave my younger son a treatment. And he was the only doctor in Russell's whole life that has tried to connect, to understand the connection between spina bifida and cystic fibrosis. And so this was just about 25 years ago. But what his suspicion was is closer to epigenetics than anything else, that the surgery that corrected his spina bifida had put his sacrum out of place inadvertently, and that that had compromised the flow of spinal cerebral fluid and had kicked off the CF mutation. It was a fascinating theory, and now that epigenetics is a burgeoning field, it seems quite possible.
What kind of an adjustment did he do with the sacrum? He sort of put it back where it was supposed to be?
Robert Fulford was obviously passed away since then, but he was an extraordinary hands-on healer and a very seasoned osteopath. And so he had Russell climb up on the table. He lay on his back, and Dr. Fulford checked out his different joints, his hip joints, his diaphragm, and his rib cage, and said, oh, his rib cage is very locked. So he, I hesitate to write more about it in the book because I had to look it up and research it. But he manipulated him extremely gently with his hands. And within a minute, his rib cage was completely unlocked. I mean, he could move his rib cage around like a bowl of jelly. And he then had him turn over and he went down, Dr. Fulford went down his spine. He used an instrument that he actually invented. It vibrated his spinal column. And he went up and down a couple of times. Russell was giggling because nothing hurt. It just seemed kind of silly and he didn't know what was going on. And then he was done. And we talked about chest therapy, which I had done for 4 years. There are milder forms that you can do. And he gave me a referral to an osteopath in Bethesda, Maryland, which was closer to home. And we came home. And the effect of that treatment on Russell was just amazing. I describe in the book how he would get up on the bed. This is in the evening when you want kids to calm down and read a story and go to sleep.
Yeah.
He'd jump up on the bed and pretend to be playing an electric guitar. I have no idea where he got that from. And was yelling at the top of his voice and just full of antics and energy and vitality. And I finally said, look, if you don't knock it off, I'm going to take you back to Dr. Fulford and ask him to undo what he did. You know, laughing, but
Wow.
Be serious. Yeah, that was quite an experience.
Some families go to Disney World. Others go to Dr. Fulford.
That's right.
A lot of people say that when you go to the hospital or when you go to see a specialist or a doctor, you really need to have your own advocate with you. You were an advocate and are an advocate with a capital A. Where did you get that tenacity? I mean, your schedule alone with everybody you saw, not only in conventional medicine, but with alternative medicines as well, your schedule was daunting and you kept going and you were a single mom to boot.
Well, it was exhausting.
I was going to say, did you ever just collapse at the end of your week?
Well, I do remember getting the flu at one point when the kids were little. And I said, look, kids, today you're going to watch TV or do whatever you want. Eat whatever you want. Yeah. Mom can't get up. It was tiring. I always like to refer back to my mother, who was a pilot during World War II. She was one of the, I think, 1,000 women that were trained in the WASP, the Women's Air Service Pilots Corps. And she was quite the daredevil. And
it's in your DNA.
It's in my DNA. I'm Scottish by background, so that says a lot, too. You know, I was desperate to save my son's life. And I was told over and over and over, this cannot be done. And I was determined to do it. I had this adorable little boy. And so the energy wasn't hard to muster.
So much of what you said in the book was miraculous. I mean, I don't even know how else to describe it. Are you still an atheist? Would you call yourself an agnostic, could I ask?
Sure. Definitely. The older I get, I become an agnostic. I like to use the word spiritual. Spirituality is very important to me. And I work in the Black community in Baltimore. And so I'm surrounded by some very devout people, whether that be Christianity or Islam or whatever kind of religion. And I find it very intriguing. And you're asking me, do I think now, is there a God? That would take a lot longer than we have.
Well, you've been delightful and so inspirational. Anything you want to leave us with?
I would say a couple of things. One is that it is the book that I wish I had had when I was going through this with my son. I was afraid. I was lacking in knowledge, even basic medical knowledge, for a long time. And the reason I wrote it, and it took me years to write it, and it was not an easy thing to write, but I wrote it in hopes it would help another parent. And the last thing I'd say is just that using the alternative healing approaches in addition to conventional medicine gave me hope. And when I was writing this, I thought, somebody's going to accuse me of giving parents false hope. The doctors will for sure. And I thought to myself, there's no such thing as false hope. There's either hope or there's no hope. And I decided for myself that no one has a right to take away my hope. So that's what I would say, is that there are many different approaches to healing out there, and they all have something different to offer. And this happened to be a regimen that helped my son in a battle with a pretty serious life-threatening disease. And today he is just fine. And everybody agrees he's just fine. The doctors,
incredible,
too.
Now they agree.
Yes, but they call it a miracle. They don't give credit to the alternative healing. Still, they still don't.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me. You've been a terrific interview. I've been speaking with Lindsay Bean, author of Embracing the Dragon, One Mother's Relentless Search for Healing and Hope. Thanks so much, Lindsay.
Thank you, Pat.